Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I am Tyler Bishop, and if I sound different to you, it's because, yeah, I'm barely hanging on to my voice at the moment. So we've had a busy customer week at Ezoic, and it's not something we talk about a ton on the show, but if you've been following any of that or tuned in any of that, you'll know that I've been talking a lot this week. So producer Manny is with me as always, and he will, be, I'm sure, giving my voice a much needed break as we kind of go through the news and the world of digital publishing this week, which there's a lot going on. I feel like I really enjoyed actually listening last week to producer Manny, you and Terrence, and getting Zach back on as well. You guys were a great crew. I actually found myself being like, yeah, I really agree with him on that. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, having Terrence and Zach on here was great. I think I had a harder time to get them to stop talking, and there was a lot of moments where I just let them roll. They just had so much great information to provide. So it was great having them. We'll definitely have to have them back here soon.
You can make the same argument that sometimes it's me that is on the roll and no one can get me to stop talking. But today, we may find that I've met my match, or my voice will just literally... it'll lead me. It doesn't even want to listen to me talk anymore. So the thing that I think is really interesting right now as we kind of dive into Google News is that, the Chrome address bar feature is now enabling quicker searches. And I think what's interesting to me about this is that you're seeing sort of Google trying to build, for the very first time, try to actually like promote search in a lot of different ways throughout their other products, where I kind of feel like for the last decade, Google has tried to use their non-search product or their search product to kind of promote and get people to utilize their non-search product. But I think this is a little bit of maybe Google recognizing that they are, at a moment where they need to be a little bit more protective. So, producer Manny, tell us a little bit more about what's going on with Google Chrome and what SEO professionals are saying.
Sure thing. So Google Chrome is set to enhance your browser experience with new updates to its address bar. This feature rolling out in the coming months will offer suggestions for unvisited sites, smarter autocomplete, and even correct typos based on your browsing history. Plus, you can now search your bookmarks directly from the address bar. And SEO professionals, please take note that optimizing your sites for keywords can now make them pop up in the Chrome address bar suggestions. And these changes aim to make your Chrome experience a little bit faster, more smoother, and more friendly. This is kind of seemingly the opposite of what was going on before, where they would kind of like give you the auto answers at the top of the Google search. And now it's like they're actually trying to direct people to new websites.
Yeah, I would say, I'm sure that there'll be a lot of hand-wringing over what types of algorithms and what types of things you can do to optimize pages for that. I think at the end of the day, Google tends to reutilize a lot of their existing infrastructure for stuff like that. But at the same time, I would say that, Apple has done a really good job of that with Safari and mobile. And so, Google may try to borrow a little bit from, the user experience there, because so many people have been trained sort of to use, mobile phones and Apple with it being the dominant mobile provider. So yeah, I would say if I would think about your content in regards to how, that experience is and if there's opportunities there for you, probably more so some than others, but probably for everybody. I mean, it's more search traffic, right? Like thumbs up there if you're a publisher. In the world of social media, we've got who else but X making headlines. And it's a certain executive of theirs that seems to always get most of the news. But I will say this, at least X is that there's always something going on there. And I wish I could log into my account. I haven't been able to in like 8 months. So not all innovation is good. But producer Manny, tell us a little bit more about what's going on today and at X.
Still no access, huh? It's been a while.
I had to stop trying. I used to love Twitter. I had a Twitter account for 16 years. It was one of the first ones. And it breaks my heart, but I cannot get it back. So if you work at Twitter, give me a call.
I mean, I don't know if there's anyone to call over there anymore.
Well, there's not. I think it's a abandoned building, maybe.
But yeah, in the world of Twitter, Elon Musk is shaking things up again with plans to introduce two new tiers for X Premium subscription. One tier will be more wallet friendly than their current $8 per month plan. It won't cut down on ads. On the other hand, if you are willing to pay a premium, the other tier will block all ads for you. The exact pricing is still under wraps, and this move could reshape the advertising landscape on X. And with a significant drop in ad revenue since Musk's takeover, these changes aim to not only boost revenue, but also to combat bots on the platform, which have been a pretty big problem for them recently. Stay tuned for more details regarding subscriptions, because we still aren't really sure what's going on. But then kind of tied to that and just jumping onto our next story, from entrepreneur.com, is how subscription models like Meta Verified and X Premium have transformed the PR landscape. Do you remember when a verification checkmark on social media was a badge of influence and credibility?
Yes, I remember.
Pepperidge Farm remembers. Well, in 2023, there's been a huge shift with platforms like Meta Verified and X Premium now offering these badges for a price. This change is reshaping the PR landscape and is no longer the immediate goal to get that coveted checkmark. Instead, PR professionals are pivoting, focusing on genuine brand storytelling and audience engagement in a world where lines between organic and paid recognition blur. Authenticity is now king. The message is clear: genuine influence can't be bought, and in this digital age, PR remains vital, helping brands stand out with meaningful narratives. So that's something that I remember in like the 20 teens. It was such a big deal if someone had a verified checkmark.
Yeah.
Because you knew it was them. There was no doubt in your mind that it's like, oh, that's a celebrity or something, or a politician, that's them. But now it's very
fuzzy. Yeah, they may have done themselves a big disservice here thinking they were clever. And my wife is a professional athlete, and I know that here recently they've had PR people and publicists that have worked with her on different things. And in this environment, you know, one of the things they had said to her is like, we can get you verified, but like that's just spending like $8 or whatever. And they're like, you know, it's not something that's really going to do anything. So the primary strategy now is like, they want to try to like capitalize on whenever she's in spaces where they have other clients or there's other athletes or celebrities that like they coordinate like her to post content with them. And it's like, you're basically, if you're a platform, you've thought, hey, I'm going to make this verification thing accessible and we're going to make money off of it. But what you did was you basically have taken the money that was flowing through your platform via influencers and, you know, basically like sponsored content or endorsements and affiliate. And now it's trafficking, like seemingly like off the market, like it's a black market, you know, because people have to find a way to genuinely impact, you know, what they imagine is like clout or attention. And, you know, you've taken away one of the mechanisms for that was actually easy that you had control over. So let that be a lesson too. I mean, I think of somebody like X or even Instagram is like a publishing platform in a lot of ways. And yeah, your website is a publishing platform. So, you know, changes like that are bold. I've definitely seen them I've seen websites make really bold decisions around revenue models that have not worked out. Ask every major brand publisher, and you'll have a story about failed subscriptions for the most part. New York Times doing good, but if you look, New York Times, they do make, I think it's like the majority of their revenue comes from subscriptions now, but their revenue is flat. So they just move the money around. And I'd argue that subscriptions are, you know, like a more consistent, better model. You own the audience. But the overhead though, the overhead is significantly higher. There's a lot of things there that people don't think about. But kind of moving down the line in terms of, do we have anything else on the docket for social media, or are we back into AI now?
We got one more for social media. And before we move forward, I just wanted to kind of ask you this. In a hypothetical world, if you still had your Twitter account and the landscape was still as it is today, what would it take for you to leave Twitter?
I guess it just not being relevant, probably.
Just not being relevant, misinformation.
I use it because lines. I like the format, but it also the environment, especially like topics around like this podcast. I've done speaking and things like that before, and it's a way for me to sort of plug into the space and for me to access a lot of the people that maybe are interested in, you know, my opinions or takes on different things, and then also vice versa. So it sort of plugs me into this space in a way that no other place does. So if something else did that well, I would be there. And if Twitter didn't, I wouldn't.
So it's really a matter of like when Twitter pushes you out, you would need to have something that would answer all those questions. And then some similar to something that Zach last week said. But that brings me to the next story, which are brands and retailers giving up on Twitter. Sorry, X. That's the name of the article. Yeah,
they have a terrible problem because they put out stuff all the time where they say X, formerly Twitter. It's like, you're the one that calls yourself whatever it is. Stop calling yourself formerly. Let other people do that. But like, yeah, let's move on.
It's like the artist formerly known as Prince.
Yeah.
But yes, so this article comes from DigiDay.com, and in recent findings from a DigiDay Plus research survey, raised eyebrows in the marketing world, brands and retailers seem to be distancing themselves from X, formerly known as Twitter. In 2023, only 35% of brands and retailer professionals reported posting content on X in the past month, a sharp drop from 73% in 2022. This decline contrasts with the continued popularity of meta platforms like Facebook and Instagram. Furthermore, there's been a significant decrease in investment in the original content for X, and perceptions of the platform's brand appropriateness have shifted, with only 56% of professionals in 2023 believing X is somewhat appropriate for their brands, down to 90% in 2022. One has to wonder about the platform's future in the brand and retail space.
So I'd make two arguments here. One is I don't ever believe advertiser surveys because advertisers are the masters of saying one thing, but actually, you know, like looking out for the best interest. And I think the biggest thing here is that number one, the bot thing that they talk about on Twitter, X, sorry, a lot is. The missing component of all of this is that Twitter was largely inflated by bots before, and a lot of your advertiser impressions were just being wasted. And that was kind of a money grab. And I think Musk, one of the reasons why he's lost a lot of money on this thing is because he has tried to actually like make some aspect of this like legitimate. So he's not trying to subvert or, you know, basically like, you know, it's a public company. He's trying to make sure that the revenue doesn't, you know, highlight that there's this massive fraud. You know, he's an owner. So he's like, I want to know if we're actually making money or not. And I think that that's basically hurt the reach of it. So it's not an effective ad platform, not near as effective as what they proclaimed. But I think a lot of advertisers probably knew that. And you can look at digital spending across all platforms. I think Meta, Facebook, Google's doing great. But it's just a shift in ad dollars around. I think there's a lot of other really interesting things you can do with your money in terms of advertising digitally. And Twitter's definitely not in vogue. And I have trouble seeing it being a extremely relevant platform for almost any brand other than maybe X itself.
Yeah, they're definitely, they've made so many interesting, and I'm using the word interesting very loosely, decisions this year that just continue to push the decline. And with apps like Mastodon and now Blue Sky, Gray Sky out there and Threads, I feel like it's only a matter of time before people are just ultimately going to say, you know what, like there's a good amount of users over here in this space. Let's just jump ship.
I don't think that there'll ever be something that takes the place of Twitter. Like, I don't think they'll get outcompeted for what they are. Now, the question becomes is there a different experience somewhere else that essentially provides that? Because otherwise, I think there's always going to be a place for it. I think that they've gotten undue criticism for a lot of things that I think they did that were really smart. But at the same time, I think that the volatility in a lot of the decision-making that they've gone through and the lack of follow-through, you know, like you can think about the launch of Twitter Blue and it changing like week over week or whatever makes it kind of hard. Like, I mean, I'm locked out. I can't even get help. I'm a Twitter Blue user, you know? And it's one of those things where it's like enough of those types of things over time. And maybe we just don't ever have something like that again, you know, or maybe, you know, it's a patchwork of other things, but right now it is fairly unique. And I think in the current environment, it's really hard for something else to build that sort of critical mass needed to replace it. I don't see something like Mastodon, which is like self-hosted, being able to do that. I don't think any social platform will be able to do a self-hosted model, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You have something like AI out here now that who knows what kind of social media platforms or social media experiences will emerge from, you know, like the layer of AI being embedded. I know that, you know, we've got the launch of DALL-E 3 now and ChatGPT. This is actually something that you and I were talking about earlier this week, producer Manny.
Yeah, so DALL-E 3 is out. I was playing with it a little bit earlier in the week, and one of the things I recognized is that it does a much better job with words. It knows how to spell words and knows how to spell them correctly. Sometimes it's still not perfect. I did notice from my trials with it is that it'll get the foreground word correct. Yeah. So let's say the word is house, but then it'll try to recreate the word house in the background somewhere if needed. And that will be hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
So it's still, we're still not 100% perfect, but it's really good compared to some of the other models that I've tried.
Yeah. You know, all the different models that are out there. If you go to Dream Studio, you can go through the different Stable Diffusion models. Hugging Faces has a whole bunch of things in this area called Spaces where you can try out all the different ones that are out there. But, you know, DALL-E 3, you kind of hope that they were going to make this exponential leap. I find myself with all the latest and the best ones, kind of finding myself feeling like they're all good. I mean, like they're all good. I mean, you think about what you imagined they could do a year ago and you go, man, it's incredible. But I do find myself feeling a little bit like I got my beefs with all of them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They all have just something that still requires a bit more fine tuning. But as time goes on, we do see that a lot of these models improve. Some get worse, but the ones that improve are definitely like those tools that we will continue to use. But we are getting a lot of pushback on AI with our next story. An anti-ChatGPT app, Superfy, uses AI to match people to live chats.
Anti-ChatGPT app. My first thought there is just like, it's like you type something into ChatGPT and then immediately the app's like, no, that's not true.
We're getting a lot of protesters now. I'm excited to start seeing anti-GPT shirts. That'll be fun to watch. But Superfy is revolutionizing the way users get answers and advice. This innovative mobile app connects users to real individuals for real-time responses.
This seems like the worst idea I've ever heard.
Using its Matchpoint AI technology, instead of relying heavily on AI-generated answers, Superfy ensures that a staggering 90% of responses come from real people. With an impressive median response time of just 20 seconds, catering primarily to young Gen Z audience in regions like the US, Canada, and the UK, users are spending an average of 31 minutes daily on the app, engaging in genuine conversation with a backing of $5 million in funding and plans to further expand. Superfy is available for free on iOS, ensuring a more personal touch in the digital age.
You can go ahead and clip this in the future, Manny, if it turns out that I'm like just really wrong and I'm happy to be lampooned for it. But I'm going to go ahead and say that the fastest way for this thing to succeed is to shut down the business today, and then it will at least have succeeded by not failing further. That's about how strongly I feel about how bad of an idea I think that is. And the reason being is that like it assumes that like the human answers are somehow like better than the AI ones, which I would say fundamentally, you can make the argument completely to the counter to that. Now, you might not have like copyright issues or licensing issues, but you don't have that today with search, where you can find answers to just about every question you would imagine. So I would just say that, yeah, everything about this seems like a worse. It seems like if you were to go What could have ChatGPT have been 10 years ago that no one wanted then, that search was better then, that we could actually like provide people today? That's kind of quirky. Yeah, I don't get it. I'm surprised that they even had the money for PR.
It's like ChatGPT with extra steps, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having the AI.
But worse, too.
Yeah. It also reminds me of, I don't know if you remember this back in, this is like high school for me. Do you remember Cha-Cha Answers?
No, I don't.
No? So Cha-Cha Answers was like this system online where essentially it was this. Someone would ask a question and then it would get sent to a random agent. And the agent would write an answer to
this. I think I remember something like that. Yeah.
I tried signing up to be one of the agents when I was young. And
you know what? Maybe it was you that kind of filled me in on this. Because I think I was like, I think I maybe knew somebody that said they tried to be one of these like question answerers.
It didn't pay well. It didn't pay well. I didn't stay long. I think it was like 2 cents an answer. And you maybe get like one question every 10 minutes. It didn't pay well.
It's one of those things that seems like it's a great idea where you... Now, like you, I remember for a long time, they're probably still out there, those online surveys where brands would give them money and they'd say, well, we're going to go get these surveys from people that basically were like, we're going to pay people to look at ads or pay people to take surveys. And it sounds great until like you're one of those users and you've taken like 100 surveys and you've made like $10 mm-hmm. or less than probably. It's all of a sudden the business model kills like, wah, wah. But yeah, it's very interesting. Do we have anything else in the world of AI before we get finished today?
Yeah, we got one more story just in the same realm, similar to Superfy, where people are just not fully stoked on AI. It's a story from technologyreview.com. This new data poisoning tool lets artists fight back against generative AI. Researchers from the University of Chicago, led by Ben Zhao, have developed a groundbreaking tool named Nightshade. This tool empowers artists to allow them to add invisible alterations to their artwork. When AI models scrape this modified art, they produce unpredictable and chaotic results. The aim is to challenge AI companies that use artist creations without consent. Nightshade's unique approach can cause AI to misinterpret images, turning dogs into cats or cars into cows. This innovation not only highlights the vulnerabilities of generative AI models, but also emphasizes the importance of respecting artists right in the digital age.
So I feel the exact opposite about this. I think this is a brilliant thing that's badly needed. And depending on how good it is, it offers basically what we knew was like the next sort of like phase of innovation in this space, because this is a problem, you know, like it's like any other kind of like innovative technology when it comes along. You know, you have something like Napster. It's like, well, Napster doesn't exist. I think it technically does exist, but like it's not the same thing. Streaming is the music business now. However, like, you know, the Napster came along and they really sort of violated a lot of the existing laws, but you didn't really have a place for them. But you also didn't have the mechanism to sort of like, you know, pursue anything legally, and there was no safeguards or rails. This is at least the first start to the safeguards that you can see in sort of like being able to protect, you know, your intellectual property as it relates to imagery and stuff like that, that a chatbot could, you know, use as source material. Now, the one thing that I would say, I'm curious about the mechanisms here because, you know, there's a lot of things you could do to potentially prevent, you know, something that it says invisible changes. I'm really curious about that because if it's the image source itself, there's a good chance that like you could circumvent that because you could just have the crawler then, you know, take a screenshot of the image and then index it that way. There may be something there. I'd have to read a little bit more about it. I find it quite interesting. But I think that if there's ways to circumvent this, it's only a matter of time until there's better and better ones, and it makes it to where it's not really all that helpful to even do it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's always going to be a way to circumvent things, right? Even earlier this year when I was mentioning that CBS News, if you input their URL or even information relatively similar to what was in their article, that you'd get flagged by GPT saying, I can't crawl this or I can't summarize this information or there was some sort of error. There's only so much you can do to put a wall up before someone's able to figure out a way to get around it.
Yeah.
But to try to lighten the the air regarding AI, we do have a new tool to feature that's AI this week.
Yeah, we've been doing this a little bit, and I sent you this one yesterday. I thought this one was kind of cool.
Yeah, this one was great. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's called BrandBird, and this one is probably a better fit for some sites rather than others, but it allows you to basically, it's an image editor that uses AI, among other things. You'll see it has an interface. It's very easy to use, but it's basically like a way for you to create like really good looking screenshots or product images. So if you have a review site, or you talk about technologies, or you do anything where you're maybe taking lots of screenshots, it gives you a lot of sort of like vehicles for displaying that as an image. And all you do is you upload the image, it'll put it inside of, you know, a browser window, or it'll put it on a table, or it'll kind of put it up like the way that you might see, you know, like a glass of milk in an ad. I don't know, glass of milk is probably not the best example, but yeah, it allows you to display things like products and screenshots in a way that is very visually appealing. And yeah, you can change all kinds of little details about it, but it kind of does all the hard lifting for you. It's free. You can turn tweets into images in kind of cool ways. There's quite a few like different use cases that it has, but it's called BrandBird .app is what it is. So was there any that you saw that were kind of like, gave you any inspiration or ideas, Manny?
I was taking a look at a lot of these. I thought they were great for like blog posts, or just like header images for blog posts. I saw a lot of the reviews that said that they were able to replace Canva altogether. Mm-hmm. And what was really cool is if you upgrade and get the premium version, they even have AI generative tools within the app so that you can then input stuff like that. So it's just another Canva competitor with AI integrated, and we're starting to see AI be integrated everywhere. So this is a great tool if you're a publisher and you need to get help with your images.
Yeah, these are really great. And we've got a Rolodex of tools that we'll be, just kind of sharing with everybody. For the most part, trying to find ones that are just free, just so we can expose everybody to kind of cool new stuff that's out there. I love that stuff, so hopefully you do too. If you don't, you can leave us a message at publisherlab.org. We have our form working again now, so we heard some feedback that it was actually down, I think, for a week or so. So if you have questions, comments, or you like or don't like the tool segments, let us know. We love to respond to you guys, and that's why we do the show. So help us make it, you know, whatever you imagine or whatever you get out of it. We want to do more of that. And Producer Manny, anything else?
Nope, that's it. Thanks everyone who was with us for anything regarding Custom Week 2023. And we are so happy that you guys are here watching the Publisher Lab. Again, any feedback, leave it in the comments, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye, everybody.